you only get tested maybe at this level once in 4 years, you know what I mean? You got to have balls to kick them.
So England in possession, and that much of this ball.
And it kicks it away again.
Toby Flood.
Don't sink!
This is not soccer. This is not soccer.
Because in either game, life or rugby, the margin for error is so small.
It's day 10 for us here in Fukuoka, and after 4 weeks of inching our way south, we're finally turning around and making our way back to Tokyo. More importantly, soar the Ireland team, who, after the loss to Japan, have steadied the ship, made their way out of the pool, and now face a mouth-watering World Cup quarter-final against New Zealand this Saturday in the capital. I'm Brendan O'Brien, and with me is my Irish Examiner colleague Simon Lewis to take stock of where Ireland, the All Blacks and this tournament in general all are now that the group stage is over and Typhoon Hagibis has swept through Japan. Today's show is brought to you by the 100% electric Nissan Leaf, Ireland's best-selling electric car that could save your family thousands every year. Visit evsavings.ie to see just how much you can save by switching to the 100% electric Nissan Leaf today. Nissan. Innovation that excites. So Simon, there's only one place to start with really, and that's I suppose with the consequences for Japan as a country of the typhoon that hit Tokyo and plenty of other places on Saturday. So even as we speak, you know, recovery operations are still ongoing. The death toll seems to be over 30 with people still unaccounted for. I'm sure it's the same for you, but it's almost surreal that we're here in the same country while this is happening, and yet there's blue skies out there, and it's just very hard to comprehend really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned in your introduction there, like, we've moved ever south and westward since the start of the tournament. We're down here on Kyushu Island, which doesn't seem like an island. We got here by train, so I don't know how we did that, but we're on an island and we're far away from Tokyo. It's been sunny here. It's been delightful, really, and not, as you say, not a hint of anything untoward weather-wise, apart from a bit of chilliness on Saturday night. But yeah, it's. I suppose we're as removed mentally as people are back home, and certainly people back in Scotland who kind of were giving out about getting the game on, this, that, and the other. It's remarkable that that game went ahead last night. In Yokohama, given that the stadium was surrounded by floodwater on the previous night. And it's a credit to the Japanese people, I suppose, and as well as World Rugby for getting that game on, because it really didn't look as if it was possible to play that game. It is, I suppose it set the platform for that game last night as well. Mm-hmm. But it's just been remarkable that a country can withstand natural disaster time and again and keep bouncing back to stage Rugby World Cups.
Yeah.
Kaimashi up on in the northeast was hit by a tsunami not too many years ago. They're playing games there now with a rebuilt stadium. And it's just, there's some resilience in this country.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And that's a point I think I made my column on Friday, because I'd seen people kind of suggesting about, you know, this thing of equivalence. Oh, is it right to be playing rugby at a time like this? And the point I made, and that lots of people have made, is this is what Japan does. Mm. It just keeps on keeping on. And there's been a Japanese Grand Prix. We're into the final stages of the Japanese baseball season. That I'm not sure if that was disrupted. I'm sure it was, but that will keep on going. Life here in Fukuoka just kept on going through even the Ireland game in Samoa. But obviously plans were changed. I was meant to be at the Japan Scotland game, couldn't make it because of the weather systems and everything else. But such an emotive scene. I mean, even down here in Fukuoka, we could see what it meant to them as well. But Japan were magnificent as well, weren't they? I mean, just turning to the rugby, Scotland, I don't think, actually played that badly. I don't think they did a whole lot wrong. So if nothing else, Japan have proven that what happened in Shizuoka against Ireland just wasn't a one-off.
I know, and to go through that entire pool unbeaten as supposedly a tier two nation, although in fact they were higher ranked than Scotland going into that game, 8-9 in the world. But yeah, they're a joy to watch, aren't they? And having that home crowd behind them helps an awful lot, I'm sure of it. But it just gives them some momentum when perhaps it's flagging on the pitch. And you know, that they were good value for that win, and I was delighted when they did hold on, because it wouldn't have been rough. Scotland wouldn't have not deserved it, if you know what I mean. But It was kind of a sense that it all stuck to the script in a way.
Yeah. And I think it's a fantastic thing. I mean, I even remember watching Rugby World Cups and Soccer World Cups when I was younger. And the beauty of them, you know, in a pre-internet age especially, was, you know, you got to see these Brazilian footballers who you'd never heard of before, and suddenly realised this guy is a superstar. And you look at the Japanese guys. I mean, the try that Kenki Fukuoka set up for Matsushima, where he fell and just offloaded at that time. This is a guy who's giving up rugby after a tournament to study medicine at the age of 27. Great stories, but you look at all the players, I've a few written down in front of me, like, these are guys that we didn't really know anything about before the tournament. And one thing that you and I know is, back in the old days, not so long ago, whenever a Southern Hemisphere team would come to Dublin in November, it would be, Brian O'Driscoll, great play. Johnny Sexton, great play. And that would be it. And I think a lot of people were guilty of that in relation to Japan. They would mention Yu Tamura, and that was basically it. But, I mean, what can Japan do now? I mean, people talked about the Scotland game, the element of surprise is gone. And you saw Scotland at the start, you know, the choke tackle, physically they were trying to dominate them. They did quite well up to that first try. South Africa's a different proposition entirely. I mean, in terms of where they're at and their game and their physicality at the moment. So how do you see that quarterfinal going for the host nation?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because South Africa are a different kettle of fish altogether, aren't they? And they've beaten them already pre-tournament, the week before the first game, and quite convincingly as well, if I recall. It's a huge ask to... It's funny, we were listening to Johnny Sexton talking about Ireland getting up for France in 2015 and almost it being a come down once they got to Argentina in the quarterfinals in England and Wales. And I have a sense that that might play out again this time around. There was so much emotion in that game for Japan to get out of the pool, to make history, to reach the quarterfinals, the knockout stages for the first time. And you wonder how much is left in the tank emotionally now after that, because it was a fantastic night. And the World Cup is already a success. And they've flown the flag for Asian rugby, if you like, as well. So I don't think anyone would chastise them for not showing up this weekend. But I think they will show up and they'll give it a good rattle. I hope, but you get the sense that South Africa, they'll have built, they're building still towards this, and I don't think they're going to be denied.
Yeah, I'd share that actually, yeah. I don't see South Africa losing that one, as good as Japan have been. But you look at that fantastic performance from Japan in Yokohama against Scotland and against Ireland in Shizuoka, and then we turn to Ireland, who play a very different brand of rugby. And I'm sure I wasn't alone in looking at that last night and thinking it'll be lovely to see a little bit more of that expressiveness in the Irish game. But Ireland play how Ireland play.
And they're not going to change now.
No, not a good time to be changing. No. So, I mean, 47-5 against Samoa in Fukuoka on Saturday night. 7 tries, all this despite playing 50-something minutes with 14 men after Bundiaki was sent off. So, you know, Samoa... like, especially the first 2 or 3 tries, I thought defensively they were woeful. You know, Ireland had to do very little to get in, but, you know, that's part of the context. But how good was that Ireland performance, and how much momentum do you think it gives them going into the New Zealand game?
Well, I think given where they start from where they started, with that defeat to Japan, which was awful, it was an awful performance, certainly the last hour of it anyway. And then... kind of getting back on the bike a little bit against Russia. Again, context, 35-0 bonus point win, like a clean sheet. That's not to be sniffed at. But it wasn't, whatever the Island camp says, it wasn't a fluent performance. Yeah. It was a scratch side to a certain degree, although this squad has been together a long time. But it wasn't Island at their best. I don't think anyone's going to deny that. So the Samoa game, we get to there, 7 tries, a 14-man training drill, if you like, after having laid the platform. Aki got sent off with the score 21-5, I think. It was encouraging. And as poor as that Samoan defence was in the early days, like, That maul was impressive that Rory Best scored from. Tadhg Furlong, I don't know if there was many defences that would have stopped him in that kind of mood. He went through about four Samoan tackles to get to where he wanted to be for the second try. You know, there's a lot of good things to take from that. And, you know, no one's kidding themselves that Ireland are going to have to raise their game again.
Yeah.
Because the All Blacks, again, is a different ball game entirely. But I get the sense that Ireland do better preparing for these massive games, especially with some time. I'm sure they'll have been working on stuff aside from Samoa last week during that nine-day turnaround. The analysis will have been done, as we've heard from Vinnie Hammond, a long way out on New Zealand. They aren't the strangers that came up on the boat, you know, for a winter tour.
Yeah.
You know, this is a side well known. They may be different. They may have developed a small bit since 2018. But I think Ireland are in a pretty good place, to be honest. They'll travel to Tokyo today. So that's maybe a day's loss.
Yeah.
They'll probably do a walk through this morning before they get on the plane. And they'll do some, but they're also recovering as well. So I think they're going to hit the ground running on Tuesday. I'm not saying they're going to win. I'm sure we'll talk about that more on Friday. But but they're in a good place, you know. They've got to where they need to be. It wasn't quite the route they thought it might, you know, take them. But you know, I think they're all the better, and hopefully they're all the better for losing to Japan as early in the tournament as they did.
Yeah, well, we've heard the Japan game described as a blip about 1,800 times at this stage. So, and it was on a podcast, when was it? About a week ago, where you suggested maybe Scotland, the blip. And it was a very reasonable point to make, because we'd nothing to go on. But no, I'll back you up on that. I won't leave you hanging. That's fine.
Not yet.
But you look at Ireland as well, and I think one of the concerns coming into the tournament was individual form in a lot of places. You know, you looked at maybe some systems breakdowns in the Six Nations and tweaking them and stuff like that, and there was reasons for that as well. But in terms of players, I think we're looking at, you mentioned Tadhg Furlong there. I mean, there's a sense that like his performance on Saturday was Furlong coming back to his best, and we actually spoke to him last week about his form, and he described it as okay. You know, and so there is that sense that guys are really starting to stand up. So who else has stood out for you? I mean, you know, there's the obvious one. Sexton's in great form. Conor Murray, his passing seemed really, really sharp at the weekend. So who else is encouraging you in terms of players who are putting up their hands?
Well, I think, again, coming from where they've come from, I think CJ Stander is hitting some form now. I thought he was superb on Saturday against Samoa, as was Josh van der Fleer as well. I thought he was fantastic, you know, the work rate and you know, Henshaw's maybe looked a bit rusty. That was his first game of the tournament. I think from what we saw pre-season before he got the hamstring injury, he looked pretty sharp against Wales in Dublin. And you know, that form can't be too far from the surface with that game under his belt now. So yeah, there's some really good performances in there. Sexton and Murray, as you mentioned. Jordan Lama, like a revelation, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe his positional sense was
he's
really
coming
important.
On. You think if he was kind of... There was a bit of trepidation when he started against Scotland instead of Rob Kearney. He put that to bed in the rain in Yokohama. A lot of assurance under the high ball there. Maybe a couple of errors. But he was electric going forward. I think he led the match in stats wise for defenders beaten, clean breaks, that kind of thing. So yeah, it's all coming together, and it's an interesting selection process now for Joe Schmidt and the management team, because there's a lot of players now putting their hands up, whereas before we probably came into this tournament knowing pretty much who starts where, injuries permitting. Now he has a full deck, Bundiaki aside, and that disciplinary hearing will be in Tokyo on Monday. So, they're in a good place, dare I say it.
Oh, this seemed to be, and there is, as you mentioned earlier, Johnny Sexton was up doing media this morning, which was he was doing it with Vinnie Hammond, the analyst, which was a clever move because they work off each other very well. There was good kind of comedic duo up top, talking about the old days when they were playing as 9 and 10 with St. Mary's. So let's have a listen to what Johnny Sexton had to say this morning as he teed up Ireland's forthcoming Rugby World Cup quarter-final against New Zealand.
It'll be an incredibly tough game, but it's one that we're looking forward to, and one that I suppose we can take a little bit of confidence over the last few times we've played them. Well, I'm hoping that having lost the pool game that we've got that sort of quarter-final performance out of our system that we've had in other years. The way we played against Japan was probably very similar to the way we played against Wales and Argentina over the last two quarterfinals. And our difference is that we're not favourites going into this quarterfinal like we were in the last two. So we're building nicely. We haven't sort of hit our best performance yet, and like I said, we need to get close to that to get the right result on Saturday. That I think New Zealand are used to dealing with that pressure. I watched that documentary they did on Amazon where they're beating teams by 40 points and they're still getting slated at home. So it's that pressure, I suppose, is with them every time they pull on the jersey, so I don't think it'll be much different for this time. We've been building, I think, pretty well. Apart from that poor sort of 60 minutes against Japan, everything else has pretty much gone to plan. I suppose a lot of the negativity around us we feel has been a little bit strange, but we're pretty confident and pretty positive in how we've been building. Obviously, we'd like to be playing better at times in some regards, but I think hopefully we can put that out there on Saturday now.
So that was Johnny Sexton teeing up, as I said, this Saturday's quarter final against the All Blacks. So let's turn our attention to the All Black menace that's looming on the horizon, the Black Knight, whatever you want to call them. We'll go into more detail on them maybe in next Friday's podcast, the day before the game. But you look at where they are now, Simon. They've played three games. Obviously, their last game against Italy was controversially cancelled. But they played three games, won three, 4-157 against 22, tries 22, 4 and 1 against. So they've scored as many tries as points conceded, which is very All Blacks of them. We haven't seen a whole lot of New Zealand apart from the first game. I mean, they're always going to plough through Canada and Namibia, but it's an evolving All Blacks team in front of our eyes, even though we're in the middle of a World Cup. I mean, you talked about, Ireland aren't going to change what they're doing now, but the All Blacks are really kind of nearly thumbing their nose up at that convention and saying, we're going to find our way as we go along and we're good enough to do it.
Yeah, there is a sense that it's a work in progress. You mentioned Bonan Barrett playing at 15, Richie Moonga starting at 10, two fly halves on the pitch. That's exciting, but it's kind of unproven. They came through New Zealand all right. It wasn't, the conditions, New Zealand. They came through the South Africa game, the opening pool game. It was a fantastic pool game, but it wasn't the All Blacks at their best. Scored two tries that killed the game, basically. Great counter-attacking tries. And they withstood a lot of pressure from South Africa. So that's really, as you say, the only litmus test. They've lost their unbeaten record in pool games.
Thanks to a disastrous 0-0 draw.
It took a typhoon to do it, but there you go, yeah. So, where are they at? It's difficult to tell, and you expect them. They're made for knockout rugby, aren't they? They haven't been beaten since 2007.
Yeah.
So, in a knockout game, Ireland haven't won a knockout game in a World Cup ever.
Yeah.
So that's immediately a gulf in experience. Mm. What's not to like about the All Blacks? Mm. Don't answer that, but.
It is interesting with, Barrett, and I was reading some of the New Zealand websites today, and there's this sense of, Barrett's ready to explode and he could be the first guy to win the World Player of the Year from two different positions. This is a kind of an experiment that they've been doing for, in different ways for the last year, I suppose. they had Damian McKenzie at 15, who obviously got that terrible injury that kept him out of the World Cup. And just looking, you and I were looking at this before the podcast, you look at that New Zealand team that Ireland played in November when they beat them in Dublin. There's only, you compare that team to the team that started against South Africa in Yokohama, there's only four players playing in the same positions. Beauden Barrett has gone from 10 to 15 and Ardie Savea went from 7 to 6. So that's nine different players, and you'd imagine that's close to their top team. You look at the different wingers in there, they're still not sure about where the best centre partnership is. I think they've used five different centres. You know, Savea is doing different things. Brodie Retallick has only got 31 minutes in one of the games after his long injury. So there are, it's nearly unusual. There's a lot of known unknowns about New Zealand. That's not to say that they're weaker or anything, but it's
not at all.
And it's a different, and if you look at South Africa as well, do you remember everybody was remarking about it, how the use of the box kick and the cross kick that they didn't even take from the locker when they played South Africa during the summer. They just landed that on South Africa that night. It really took them by surprise. So it's really like the thing with New Zealand always was, you knew what you were going to get and you couldn't stop it. So it's, for me, it's perfectly feasible that they could come out with something different in terms of personnel or tactics at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, kind of nothing changes, but everything does at the same time. I think if you compared the teams from 2018 to the Chicago game 2016, very different personnel involved. Yeah. Obviously, one of the key factors in the Chicago game, Soldier Field, Chicago, was the locks, second row. There was no Retallick, no White Lock. Yeah. So they do move on, they progress, but they evolve, and you know, they keep reinventing themselves, if you like. And I think you mentioned the centre partnership. You know, you've got Sonny Bill Williams kind of bit part player now. I think Anton Lennart-Brown's been superb form.
Yeah.
He's been absolutely brilliant. He'd be in any team of the World Cup if you picked it now, I think. So, you know, they will offer some surprises. You mentioned a crossfield kick. I think that was one of the things that undid Ireland in the revenge game, if you like, in 2016 from Beauden Barrett.
Yeah.
So, they pull these things out of the hat every now and again. They're excellent at keeping their powder dry for when it matters, and this is a game that matters. So, expect the unexpected.
What about this 13-day gap since Namibia, Simon? This is something I cover GA as well, and it's something that always comes up with the disparity in the draws in the All-Ireland Championships, and such a county hasn't played in 6 weeks and the others have played four games in a row through the qualifiers. We're hearing a lot about a semi-legendary full-out training session that the All Blacks had on Friday. It sounds an awful lot like a Nolan Park Kilkenny hurling training session. And if they do go on and win it, I think this will go down in history.
The seminal moment.
The best game never seen, basically. Yeah. But I think it's impossible to argue that Ireland aren't better for having that hit out against Samoa, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think it's horses for courses. Ireland definitely needed that game against Samoa. Imagine if their game had been cancelled. The anxiety would have caused just in this room, having not played from Russia in Kobe to Tokyo in a quarterfinal next Saturday. So, yeah, they needed it. As we talked about, getting back on track after the blip, stroke, disaster. So, yeah, it's horses for courses. I think Ireland will benefit from that. I think they feel that they needed the nine-day gap between Russia and Samoa to get their house in order. They blew out some cobwebs with a weekend off. Then they hit the ground running with a training week. They've got another long training week, 7 days this time around. And they are generally better at coping with long lead-ins to games than short turnarounds. So, you know, there was a long build-up to Scotland in the opening pool game, and they hit the ground running. I think 7 days is enough for them, as was 9 days was perfect. So it's all about timing. I don't think New Zealand are going to be sorry they had the weekend off, put it that way. Yeah. And yes, they are obviously feeling pretty good about themselves. They wouldn't say anything else. But and I think it was interesting that Kieran Reid was asked yesterday whether you know, they do well after extended breaks because they don't start tours well in the Northern Hemisphere when they come every November. And they tend not to play well in the summer series that precedes the Rugby Championship. But Kieran Reid was at pains to say, we haven't had a break. Yeah. You know,
How dare you suggest this?
2 weeks off, you're kidding. And yeah, it's how you treat it as well. I mean, if Ireland needed that blowout weekend, I'm not suggesting they went mad, but they got away from rugby for a bit. They did their own thing. They met their families, and it seemed to do them the power of good. And I'm sure New Zealand haven't wasted any time.
And I'm sure we'll hear a couple of barbs and jokes from Mr. Steve Hansen during the week. I'm looking forward to
Comedy Steve.
I'm looking forward to attending those press conferences, because he set it up very nicely in November when he talked about Ireland with the pressure of having, you know, the world number one tag on their back and saying whoever won that game would be the best team in the world. So plenty to look forward to there. And that's before we even mentioned the other three quarterfinals. We briefly mentioned Japan and South Africa at the top of the show. So just to go through the other semi-quarterfinals, England and Australia play in Oita. I still don't know how to pronounce that one, on Saturday. And Wales and France meet in the same city on the Sunday. So there's absolutely plenty to look forward to. But maybe let's just wrap it up by looking at the quarterfinal stages. You know, we've had some wonderful games, wonderful performances so far. Is this the point where Cup Rugby comes to the fore? The weather is starting to turn a little bit chillier. Are we going to see some more up-the-jumper stuff, a lot more cross-kicking, or, you know, are you confident that we're going to see some sparkling rugby from here on in?
Well, as you say, I think a lot depends on the conditions. And it's not always up-the-jumper stuff. I think, you know, we talked about it before. You know, New Zealand came out and hammered France in Cardiff at the quarterfinal stage.
And Argentina hammered Ireland.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that, not me. But yeah, so these things, you know, you do get exciting games in quarterfinals and sometimes semifinals as well, you know. But things, it's only human for you know, a bit of tension to creep in now that we're at the business end of a tournament. Knockout rugby, win or go home, that tends to do things to the mind, doesn't it?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So I think that wraps it up for us today. We've a flight to catch to Tokyo. We're saying goodbye to Fukuoka after, 10 days?
10 days.
10 days of yatais, food stalls, and...
yeah, it's been tough.
It's been a tough... lovely city, in fairness. Yeah, really, really nice city. So the next time you hear from us, we'll be in Tokyo next Friday, but I suppose you can catch up with everything that's happening in the Irish Examiner every day as well. So you have been listening to the Irish Examiner Rugby World Cup podcast with the Nissan Leaf, the world's best-selling electric vehicle. Book a test drive today at nissan.ie. Nissan, innovation that excites.